Looking for excitement? Chumba Casino is here. Play anytime, play anywhere. Play on the train, play at the store, play at home, play when you're bored. Play today for your chance to win and get daily bonuses when you log in. So what are you waiting for? Don't delay. Chumba Casino is free to play.
Experience social gameplay like never before. Go to Chumba Casino right now to play hundreds of games, including online slots, bingo, Slingo, and more. Live the Chumba life at ChumbaCasino.com.
Terms and conditions apply. Third hour, Darren Donica Chase on this Tuesday afternoon. Hope everybody's having a good day to this point. Had a great Labor Day weekend. Darren McFarland, Willie Donick, and Chase McCabe with you. Halfway through today's show, another fast-paced 2 hours to go. We start in Knoxville. WNML, the sports animal. Vince Ferrara is on the line with us at Vince Sports on Twitter. Vince, not a good weekend for the Vols at all. Man, they had a lot of players missing practice.
Yeah, and good to be on with you guys. Appreciate it. And Jeremy Pruitt kind of dropped that on us. He's been doing regular Zoom media avails with us, and he kind of volunteered that on Saturday. They did practice, but they were planning to scrimmage. Actually, they were planning to scrimmage Wednesday, and they pushed it back to Saturday, and then Saturday had 44 players that were out from Saturday's practice. Now, he said it was mostly due to contact tracing. And when asked about how many active COVID-19 positive cases they had, he said 7 or 8. That's higher than I think they've had at any point ever going back to probably since when they came back from 4th of July weekend, they got tested. So, overall, I thought that was it slows your development. He said, look, I'm glad we didn't have a game this weekend because we probably couldn't beat much of anybody. And when you're talking about missing that amount of players, sure, anyone's going to be at a massive disadvantage. But the key to me on this, guys, is where did the contact tracing go back to? Like, where did it originate from? Is it guys in their living situations, and that's where you had a lot of people, say, in one, one living area that seemed to all get it? Did they have a big gathering? I know some people have said, oh, look, this goes back to that march that they had a couple of Saturdays ago. And who knows, maybe if someone was positive there and there are a lot of people were around one person, maybe to be safe, then they shut everybody down and put everybody around that person in quarantine. And that's going to obviously multiply the number of people in contact tracing. If it's that kind of thing, I think that is something that is manageable and you're being cautious about it. And you take a little bit of a time period where you can't get as much football prep done, but you get everybody back healthy, hopefully. But if this comes back to football, where there was, like, a lot of us thought that might happen going into the year with football, everyone's like, oh, you guys are going to exchange sweat and spit and all this. Linemen, when they block, it's football. Of course everyone's going to trade it out, and you're going to have the contact tracing is going to shut everybody down. If this gets back to something passed along in contact trace through football, regular football, then that's a little bit different. Then that will be a little bit more of a concern, because then that's probably something that a lot of other teams will have to deal with. When to this point, guys, we really haven't heard much about football adding any sort of level of enhanced ability to potentially transfer COVID-19 or shutting teams down. We really haven't seen a lot of that. So where did it come from? We don't have those answers yet. Hopefully we get a chance to follow up with Jeremy Pruitt on that. But I think that was the most significant thing.
I think that's a great question, Vince. I just had a eureka moment with you saying that, because I would love to know more about that. Is the cases that the football teams have seen, especially on the college campuses, is it traced to something that happened on the practice field, or is it just more likely to be the living, like you said, in a dorm, living situation, people went out, something like that?
Right.
Because that it would be really encouraging to know that it's not happening, exchanging with all the contact and everything that would logically be something you would worry about, right, on the field.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, Willie. And that's why, even though some people, you know, ESPN, a lot of the national outlets, they ran with it and they made it seem like, you know, Tennessee had 44 cases of COVID-19. And fans that didn't like that the team did the protest downtown, they were like, see, now you got all these COVID cases because of that march downtown. And that's just people trying to stick in their political views on it. We don't know if it went back to that. Honestly, if it went back to that and that's where you got your contact tracing from, I would take that over the day-to-day football contact tracing, right? Because that's something that you can avoid moving forward. And maybe you learn your lesson from that, and then now you can go about your regular everyday football activities and then not have you be scared that just football work is going to potentially shut you down. I mean, look at Ken Niumatalolo and Navy, him deciding not to do any live tackling or anything going into the season because he was afraid of the contact tracing and, you know, keeping the players safe. Well,
my guess is they'll be tackling. They'll be tackling this week. My guess is they'll be tackling this week.
Absolutely.
I'm just going to say that he's going to probably do something a little bit different.
Well, they still haven't really done any tackling.
That was pathetic. No, that's what I'm saying. They may want to work on tackling this week because that was a pathetic performance.
Rough.
By the way, and I can say that because, you know, since he's been there, I mean, Navy has
been a well-coached
team. Very, very competitive team. You do not see losses like that coming from Navy. I mean, last night was over from jump. It was pathetic. They were never in that game. And they clearly look like a team that had done exactly what you said, not practiced at all on tackling, and it showed. It showed big time.
Well, it's also a lesson for anyone else that's been hesitant to do tackling because they're afraid of the contact tracing shutting them down. Do what you need to do, even if you do it in small groups or whatever. Test the next day after, you know, doing any tackling, whatever you need to do. If you're going to move forward and be worth a darn, you have to do some of that. So I think that might be lesson learned for everybody else to learn from. But I think in large part, teams have avoided that contact tracing shutting down big chunks of a team. Where did it come from? I think that's a big part of it, even though nationally they made it seem like, you know, Tennessee has this widespread COVID, and they really haven't. I think they're also being cautious with it as well. And he doesn't think they're going to get all 25 of their practices in, over this 42-day period. And they've just had to slow things down at times. And I think that's probably the case at more places. And then other coaches just haven't been willing to volunteer that information. I think that's a factor also.
What do you make of these lopsided scores? What few college football games we've had? I mean, you just referenced, I mean, last night's game was a snooze fest. Unfortunately, yeah. MTSU offered nothing to Army. Eastern Kentucky got absolutely blasted by Marshall. I mean, what do you make of all these games that have been really, really lopsided right out of the gates?
Well, what I'd make out of it is good luck to anyone that's betting. Like, stay away from that stuff. I mean, do what you want to do with your money or your mortgage budget or whatever. That's up to you. But, man, I would stay away from it because you just don't know how teams are going to come out, especially in week one coming off of all this. And then even, teams on the road haven't really been phased. That's something that we had talked about as a potential because there's not the crowd. I think there's going to be variance on how teams handle road situations. I think the older teams will probably be able to travel and be more mature with those now new circumstances, whereas maybe some of the younger teams might have a different level of anxiety going to a new place and, hey, am I safe? Is this guy going to get this? Or is this guy going to make the right decision on the road? Things like that. So I'm not going to rule out the road being the road team still having somewhat of a challenge, but I think it's just going to vary greatly. And then who's tackling, who's going to have players missing. I mean, why anyone would want to try to guess how this season is going to go from a week-to-week standpoint. I mean, I get it. It's sports. It's fun. That's part of it. I get all that. But my point is that we're going to have more unknowns and more extremes this year than we're used to seeing. And even within conference play, I think you're going to see a lot of surprises at times. It's just a matter of, does it all even out to shake out to where a team that is on the wrong end of a surprise one week is on the right end of a surprise the next week, and then it evens out. I mean, that's where the unknown comes in.
I mean, Eastern Kentucky was getting almost four touchdowns in points, and they lost 59-0. I mean, just think about it. I mean, you know, you look at that line, and you're like, okay. Hey, you know, okay. It's a lot of points to be given with all the uncertainty and unknown.
I'll dabble.
Well, if you dabbled, you threw that ticket away pretty quick.
Yeah.
Pretty quick. Right, Chase?
Oh, man. And then Middle's clock management. I mean, goodness. That was just, I knew you guys had talked about it. That was as bad as I can recall a sequence. I mean, you can throw in the Butch Jones or Derek Dooley jokes all you want. I mean, it really made no sense whatsoever. And not used to seeing them. Usually they're you know, pretty well coached. That was a stunner.
And I have to think that has to go back to prep time and practice time. I mean, Middle Tennessee, Rick Stockstill's been the coach for a long time. They're not known for having that happen. They've won a lot of games. Right. They've been to a lot of bowl games. That was stunning for sure. So Vince Ferrar is with us. We will continue on. Talked about the 44 players missing practice. So now moving forward here, let's take a look at a couple of guys. You know, you've always followed Josh Dobbs, Vince.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think is next for him? This is an interesting thing to get him back to the Steelers. That's got to be on a surface it seems like a lateral move, but I think it's a good move.
Yeah, I think the Steelers would have wanted him as their backup quarterback last year, based on how things went with Mason Rudolph and Duck Hodges. Although they did still end up winning, you know, a fair amount of games and weren't that far away from a playoff spot. But I wonder if Dobbs would have given them more at that QB position in their mind. So, the Jags went young because they're clearly tanking for Trevor, and went with a young quarterback as the backup and let go of both of their veterans in Glennon and Josh Dobbs. So I think it's a place where they know his skill set. They already liked him. They had brought in Mason Rudolph, and that's why Dobbs was more expendable, and they're trying to use their depth to improve another position. But I think Dobbs does give them another good veteran backup in that role, and they know how to use him, whereas somebody else may not be willing to change what they do when they have to go to a backup quarterback. So that's an adjustment they don't need to make, and it's probably some trust factor too. So I thought it made a whole lot of sense for him to go back and made the 53, which is a positive. He may not be active every game, but at least he's on that 53.
If you go to the WNML website, Vince has an excellent blog if you want to keep track of former Tennessee players that made teams, got waived, ended up on practice squads. Let's focus on two wide receivers that people watched a lot of, Juwan Jennings and Marquez Callaway. Tell us the latest with both of those.
Yeah, Jennings was released, and he actually announced it on, on social media. It might have been Instagram. Before even the team did, that he tried his hardest, but he didn't make the 53, but he was going to stay after it. Well, the next day, he was one of the players that were brought back to practice squads. And you guys know, and having talked about it with the Titans, teams went, for the most part, from in and around 80 to about 53. Well, when you can have 16 on your practice squad, including veterans, it's a good chunk of the players that got released got brought back in the practice squad. So that was the case for a lot of the VFLs, including Juwan Jennings. And I thought that with the injuries that the 49ers have had a wide receiver, I thought there was a chance that he could make the 53. But, you know, I think it is still a good sign that he was brought back to that practice squad. I'm sure they see some upside in him. But, you know, you just have to go, I think, with these circumstances. I think teams are tending to default to older players and the trust they have in them in their 53, more so than the practice squad. So that, at least, he got back in the league. And as far as Callaway, when he signed with the Saints as an undrafted free agent, I said, might have been with you guys, but I said it certainly a lot, that I thought that was a great fit for Callaway. The Saints were top-heavy at receiver and needed to bolster 3 through 6 or 7. And the numbers were there in Callaway's favor, and he brought special teams skill sets as well in the return game. And that's something that Sean Payton pointed to and said he has caught on and he wants to get better, and he's a good kid. And so that it was a good situation for him. He had a good camp and made that 53, and I think you'll see him back returning kicks. He can take a little bit of a load off of some of their other guys, like Kamara and others. So happy for him. And now, remember last year, the two undrafted free agents Tennessee had ended up starting games, and Kyle Phillips with the Jets, Shad Tuttle with the Saints. And now Callaway is an undrafted free agent, makes it. They have to have undrafted free agents make it because they haven't had very many guys drafted. That will change certainly next year moving forward. But the total number of Tennessee players now that the Steelers signed Dustin Colquitt yesterday is 21 active guys and then 11 that are inactive on either practice squads or reserve lists. And another notable was Darrell Taylor was put on the reserve non-football injury list. He hasn't recovered yet from his injury, stress fracture injury he had at Tennessee that he played through. And so that shuts him down for 8 games. So second-round pick and Darrell Taylor not able to make an impact with the Seahawks right away. And we'll see if he's able to get back and contribute some. But that hurts your rookie year when you have to miss the first half of the season at minimum.
Talking to Vince Ferrara from 99.1, the Sports Animal, WNML in Knoxville. So along the lines of Vols in the NFL, I know that Jeremy Pruitt's job is obviously to win football games at this level at the University of Tennessee, but I do believe that the coaching staff's job is also to develop players not only for your program, but for their future aspirations in the league, because so many times you have seen Vols players go on and have successful NFL careers, and they're not just named Peyton Manning. So with all that said, how much do you think he looks at this, of the number of players that, you know, are on a practice squad or get cut all together from an NFL team, or do you think he really focuses on that at all?
Depends on when you're asking him to focus on it. Right now,
fair,
it's the farthest thing from his mind. But it's a great question, Chase. I do think that it matters in recruiting settings. It matters. You know, Tennessee at 21 on active rosters. I haven't run the number for everybody, but I think Alabama has 57 on active rosters. So, you know, they're not what it used to be. Tennessee used to set the bar in the SEC or be right up there in terms of players in the league. And they got a long way to go to make up for that. They've actually had a lot of guys that underperformed in college that have succeeded and stuck in the NFL, the Justin Colemans, the Emmanuel Mosleys, players that didn't get drafted, and you can go on and on. So it actually does better than maybe what the product on the field at UT has been. But I do think that's going to improve, and they can't wait to be able to use that and address the negative recruiting that they get on that topic, and then use the new influx of Pruitt-coached and developed talent and help them in that area, because anything they're accomplishing in recruiting has been without that. Because there's really, Pruitt hasn't been around long enough for you to point to a lot of guys as an example. However, I know from talking to a number of people in the league, they are aware that players are getting developed better, Chase, than they were under Butch Jones, and that Jeremy Pruitt coached players because he has a track record going back to Alabama, Georgia, Florida State, that they're going to be NFL ready and trained to do some of the scheme things that they'll need to do in the NFL. So it's an important thing that the NFL has already been able to use, but they haven't been able to use it in recruiting just yet. And I think next year we'll start that shift and improve that.
Yeah, I just bring it up, and I know it's completely different with a program like MTSU, but you know, Kevin Byard and even Richie James, who's on the 49ers roster as a returner. I mean, I'd milk that for all it's worth, you know, those two guys. But I've been curious of how a coach would look that. And the second part, the fan base, like how much do the fans keep up with some of these players after they leave the program? Do you get a lot of calls, you know, on your guys' shows of all right, how's X player doing with this NFL team? Or is it more, well, they're gone now, so let's focus on what this Tennessee team looks like?
Yeah, the answer is it was all Butch Jones' fault. And that's what we get. I mean, the reaction, because I was posting a lot about the VFLs getting cut, and I put a list out of, you know, a bunch of guys at the time that had been cut so far, and there was a ton of reaction on social media to it. And we certainly get calls. The NFL is massive everywhere. I think there's certain guys that resonate more than others do. But it also, when you talk about the success of an Alvin Kamara or some of those other guys, it also adds frustration that they didn't do more at UT. So, because the NFL matters and it's UT, I do think that they still follow it. The ton of reaction to Dobbs, people going back and forth, on, you know, hey, the Titans should pick up John Kelly, or wish the Titans would sign Josh Dobbs and things like that. And so, yeah, there's certainly a lot of interest in it. And, you know, once that enhances, there's more of those successful UT players in the league, I think that will only multiply. Like this year, we got a lot more on the NBA. Why is that? Because Grant Williams is with the Boston Celtics and plays a role in that team. You know, Admiral Schofield was with the Wizards, and Kyle Alexander with the Heat and things like that. So you have more of the guys that are recent success stories at your school that are in the league, and I think it adds interest. So I think it will increase even more once you get the Trey Smiths and others into the NFL.
I don't know what Jeremy Pruitt and his staff are doing, but it seems like they were slacking this past week. No big recruiting news. No five-star recruits landed. So, I mean, I don't know. Maybe they took Labor Day weekend off. Gosh.
But, you know, feed up is common in recruiting, you know. So.
Yeah, that's true. Hey, good stuff as always. Hope you had a good weekend. Thanks for doing this. You have a good week. We'll do it next Monday. There'll be a lot more to talk about.
Yeah, always. Never a dull moment around here. You guys know that. Be safe this week. Appreciate you.
Vince Ferrara, Sports Animal, WNML, there in Knoxville. He joins us every Monday at noon. Today, he joined us because we did not have a show yesterday, and he is sponsored by TechCore. We appreciate him joining us. We'll come back. This hour, we will hear from President and CEO of the Titans, Burke Nyhill. We'll hear some of the things that he said today. So things on tap here on Darren, Donick, and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Appreciate Vince for joining us, sponsored by TechCore. We appreciate his visits every week as the SEC gets a little bit closer to them getting cranked up. There'll actually be games in the ACC. I think Clemson plays this weekend. Syracuse and North Carolina will play against each other. Iowa State plays, so a Big 12 team. Duke and Notre Dame is this Saturday. Let's see. Clemson plays Wake Forest, Texas and UTEP, UCF and Florida International, Oklahoma and Missouri State are the games on tap for this Saturday. Actually, the UCF-FIU has been postponed. So get to a little bit more as we get to a little bit more college football and some of the bigger boys, bigger teams getting out there and playing as well, see what they have to bring to the table. Heather Dinich had a tweet we're going to talk about. Will, I'm going to let you set it up.
Well, Heather Dinich is one of many people that have reacted to this quote from Lincoln Riley, where he basically was doing a press conference and shared that he was not going to release any football COVID testing data moving forward because of, quote, competitive advantage. Oklahoma has decided to start treating these things like injuries when it comes to public disclosure. So Heather Dinich's response is there should be a rule about this. It's not an injury. It's not a public health crisis. And a lot of people have weighed in with the same take. You know, injuries aren't contagious. We're talking about a national health issue here. But I don't know what the rules are. Who is going to enforce it?
That's exactly right. That's the point. Right back
another,
here.
But a lot of people think that, you know, if it's like back there was a day and time where in the NHL nobody said upper body, lower body. They actually would say, yeah, he's got a thigh injury or he's got a knee injury, and then it eventually became upper body, lower body. And now it's fit to play, unfit to play. So there is this competitive advantage thing. And so most people think Lincoln Riley will start the dominoes falling, and that's what a lot of coaches will do. And so how do we feel about that? I think it is important from a health standpoint to know how teams are dealing with the virus and how they are able to contain it. Are they doing a good job? Are they having problems? I think that needs to be public info, doesn't it?
Yeah. I mean, this is another example of lack of leadership by college football, whether it's, you want to say it's the NCAA or the conferences or whatever, just everybody doing their own thing. If there's not a rule in place, like you see with the professional leagues of how they're going to do it. You know, the NHL decided we're just going to say it's unfit to play. That's how we're going to do it. We've agreed on that. I think it should be released. I think that you don't have to release names or anything like that. But if you say, hey, we do have some positive tests, and then you let everybody figure it out, whatever. But just keeping it closed doors, and I do think that that's an issue.
Nicole, what do you mean, how's everybody going to figure it out?
Well, if let's say Donick is star wide receiver for Oklahoma, and they're all of a sudden he's out. And then you say, yeah, we got one positive test from our team. I think you put that together. I don't know with college.
So then we're back to speculating again, which we've said doesn't do anybody any favors.
Hang on. There is a difference with college students and professional athletes that are paid. I do understand that part. I don't buy the whole competitive advantage part, but I do understand of releasing names for an quote-unquote amateur athlete. There are some differences there.
Okay, but what if he's got a? What if he pulled his hammy in practice that you're not privy to? So you're just going to speculate that that's what it may be?
I mean, that happens some now already,
right? Is that good for the kid? Is that fair to them?
No.
So you're labeling him as possible testing positive, and he's actually got a pulled hamstring,
right? But this goes back to the.
This is going to create a big problem.
Right. This goes back to, okay, somebody needs to say, hey, here are the rules, or they need to get a committee together and figure out rules. I mean, you now have it. It's up to pretty much every school to do it whatever way they want to do it.
Well, and Nicole Auerbach on Twitter, all along those lines, is reporting that Oklahoma is far from being the only school doing this. Lots of schools haven't reported any testing data at all. So,
yeah, do we think Nick Saban's going to stand up at the podium and say that so-and-so player?
It's a good question. I mean, if it's not him, somebody else. You know, and so it comes down to we're in a pandemic, right? This isn't your normal situation of a coach just deciding to go Bill Belichick on you, right? That this is a little different. So how should you handle that?
I don't think that name should be released. I don't think that's fair either.
But if the quarterback doesn't show up,
but you
how do you
say,
do it? What,
if
so
you
what
have
would you
numbers,
suggest?
I don't know. I mean, I don't think it's fair because people will automatically label a college kid as he did something wrong when, you know, maybe he didn't. Maybe he didn't do anything wrong. Maybe it was just bad luck. Just like what Andrew Whitworth said with the Rams on Hard Knocks. Like, you get labeled like, oh, you were out on the, you know, at the bars, right? College kid's going to get labeled at a party for sure.
Of course.
100%. Which, what if it wasn't? But what if he went and picked up a pizza and got
right.
it? I mean,
but this is important data, though. Like, this is what we're all trying to learn is how we live with the virus. That's part of it. They could be helpful with that. Like Vince's point of how much is actually traced back. It's a huge element of, let's just take the metro schools who have decided not to play. What is the data that shows that when you play a game, how much more likely is there to be a spread during the game? Or is it much more likely that it's just players going home and getting it, you know, like you said, getting a pizza or going out to dinner or just like any other number of ways you can get it? Is there, what's the increased risk by the interaction, the bumping, the tackling, the collisions, all of that interaction that we see at a football game?
Well, yeah. Darren, I think you and I are kind of on the same page with that. Of, I mean, if you don't, I look at it differently. I look at it as, okay, they're amateur athletes. I get it, quote unquote, amateur athletes, but that, you know, you have to factor that in for releasing their names. But I think you make a very good point too of not labeling these kids of, oh yeah, they went to a party, they messed up, and unfortunately, there's going to be a lot of that.
Oh, I mean, there's no doubt, and it could have been that. I'm not
right.
saying.
And
I'm just saying, but what about the ones who
is,
did? Right, and what about? I'm saying, just what about the ones who actually didn't?
That.
You're right. I mean, of course. I mean, is that going to be the reason for some? Sure. Absolutely. We know that. I'm saying I don't think it's fair to release names because everybody's just going to assume, like, what are you doing, Dodo Brain? Your team is depending on you, and you're the star quarterback, and you were at a party. And he's going, I wasn't at a party. I
yeah,
went to
but
go
that's...
get pizza, and I think – that's where it happened. I, you know, I forgot my mat. Whatever. You know, I mean, I'm just saying, whatever the story is, what if it wasn't that everybody's going to assume, and then he gets crushed?
Well,
you know,
that's
like, you got to be more responsible than that. You're supposed to be the quarterback. You're supposed to be smarter than that. And that, I don't think that's fair either.
It's not, but that's where you have to have some sort of leadership from the conference or the, you know, national level that says, hey, here's the protocol. And this is the protocol that everybody has to follow. But once again, we're having a conversation about entities in college football not being on the same page and not having a plan. So therefore, you're going to – right now, it's okay for these coaches to say, yeah, we're not going to release anything. You don't get to know anything.
I think if nothing is done, that's the way it's going to go, right? More and more coaches – well, if Lincoln Riley is not going to do it, then I'm not going to do it. You're going to have a lot of that. So Heather Dinich's proposal of there should be a rule, who would make the rule?
Exactly.
That's the question.
There's nobody that can make a rule. No. Unless the conference commissioners, I guess, within each conference could say
yep.
that if they
it's
wanted to do it.
Yep.
Well, but see, right now, so if Lincoln Riley comes out and says, we're not going to do anything, and then, you know, the quarterback is out, the speculation is going to be through the roof of what Darren just said of, well, yeah, he probably went to a party. He had a frat party or something, and he probably got COVID. That's it. That's exactly what's going to happen.
It's complicated no matter which way you go.
It is. And, you know, that's the nice thing about the pro side, whether you're in a bubble or the way that the NFL is doing it, is at least they are able to all get in a room or on a Zoom and get together and say, hey, this is our plan, and then they stick to the plan, and now we know. With the NFL, we know. We know that Isaiah Wilson is on the Titans' COVID reserve list. So, you know, and we know that he got busted going to a party a couple weeks ago. So there you go. We kind of think, all right, that maybe that's what happened. But here, there's so much left to speculation. And they don't have any type of plan that we just sit there and we go, all right, well, what does this mean?
The Buccaneers have signed Josh Rosen. Are they going to – are they adhering to the roster limits? They're only allowed to have 53, right? That's the active. I kind of feel like the Bucs have 75 guys on their active roster.
It does feel that way.
Tampa seems to be the one who signs everybody.
Does Brady being on your team mean you get a different set of rules, or how does that work?
I think, honestly, it means if you have Tom Brady with his history of always playing, I don't think it matters who's your backup quarterback. Bruce Arians could be the backup. You know, when's the last time we've seen the backup?
Well, Brady. He is 43.
Yeah.
At some point, they might need a backup. But I think the bigger interest – well, Leonard Fournette, too, he was quoted as saying, for the first time in my career, I actually have a quarterback. Thanks a lot for all the Jaguars quarterbacks.
He's actually had a quarterback, but I think he meant like a real quarterback.
It was kind of funny the way that looked in print.
Yeah.
But Josh Rosen, first-round pick, third team, practice squad, man. It's not going well. It's going the wrong direction.
I think we know what Josh Rosen is.
Who is the Bucs number two? I'm trying to think off the top of my head.
I'm looking it up. Hang on.
DeBerg?
Steve DeBerg. Yeah.
Steve DeBerg.
Maybe DeBerg. Vinny Testaverde?
Could be.
Vinny Testaverde.
That's a good one.
It is
Craig Erickson.
Steve Young?
Steve Young.
Keep naming some names. Because I know who it is now.
Trent Dilfer.
No, it's not Trent
Brad
Dilfer.
Johnson.
Not Brad Johnson. That's a good guess, though.
Oh.
It is.
Who is it?
Blaine Gabbert?
Josh Rosen probably feels like he's got a shot.
And then Ryan Griffin is the third string.
Sure.
So Josh Rosen is technically the fourth string quarterback.
Oof.
Jeez.
Okay.
Just big, a bus pick.
Big game
play. Well, they better hope that they keep Brady upright. Things are going to change if they've got a drop off there.
Yeah, I don't think Tampa's going in with we'll be all right if Tom Brady gets hurt.
But he's 43. At some point.
Yeah, but Blaine Gabbert.
At some point, you're going to need a backup there. That's interesting. They've kind of, I guess, they don't have enough money to just do everything they want. But wow,
money really hasn't been an issue in Tampa. At least it hasn't looked like it's been an issue.
Well, they're up against the cap. That was why they had to wait on Fournette and give him incentives and things like that. They didn't have a lot of wiggle room there.
All right, we'll come back. We will hear the Titans' kind of front office. The higher-ups in the Titans front office spoke today via Zoom. We'll hear that on the other side to close out the third hour of Darren Donica Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Titans President Burke Nihil and Senior Vice President, Chief of Marketing and Revenue Officer, Gil Beverly spoke today to the media, front office of the Titans, and here's what they had to say.
Yes, thanks, Robbie, and thanks, everyone, for joining us this morning. As we kick off the 2020 regular season, it feels like the 2019 season ended about 3 years ago at this point. But 2019 was a very special year for our organization and for Titans fans. It started off with the 2019 NFL draft in downtown Nashville, which by any measure was the best draft in the history of the NFL, and ended with a magical run to the AFC Championship. Of course, about a month after the AFC Championship, our organization found itself deploying into North Nashville and other communities around Tennessee to help our neighbors dig out their homes and businesses from the devastating tornado. And within about a week after that, our offices were closed for a period of about 2 months. But it has been an unusual and a challenging offseason, but our leadership team is just so proud of the work that our team has done during that time. Really first-class work, whether it's standing up a remote workforce over the course of a weekend, to setting up a virtual draft over the course of April, to more recently getting St. Thomas Sports Park and Nissan Stadium ready for a healthy and safe reentry for our players and staff. And in the case of Nissan Stadium, hopefully getting it prepared for the safe reentry of fans at some point later this season. But there's no question we're thrilled to finally be paying attention to something that feels very normal and exciting, which is Titans football when they put the ball down on Monday night. With that, I'll kick it over to Gil.
Yeah, it's great to be with you guys today. I haven't seen some of you in a while. And it's a great time to be a Titan, as Burke just kind of laid out. Excited because, you know, we have a ton of momentum with our fans coming out of last year's playoff run. And we've seen that reflected in the enthusiasm and anticipation for the start of this season. As you all know, we're not able to start this year the way we would have liked with the full and packed Nissan Stadium. But we have a number of fun things planned for our fans, starting with Nissan Kickoff Week, which launched yesterday. And I'm sure we'll get to that in a bit. That will open it up to questions.
John Glennon.
Sure. I think this might be more of a Gil question, but whichever one feels better about answering is fine with me, or if both. Wondering if you guys can talk about the process of trying to create a home field advantage in this particular year, where at least you're starting out with no fans, and maybe in particular also touch upon the kind of the crowd noise that has to be, you know, brought into that situation and how that's done.
Yeah, I guess that would be more for me. That's a tough one, John, because there's only so much we can do in this environment in terms of, you know, how we can attack the in-game environment with no fans. But we will be running something of a normal show in terms of this in-stadium elements with the music and introductions and things that hopefully will help fire up our team. We also have done a program where fans will be able to, quote unquote, buy cutouts of themselves that will appear in one of the end zones, which will have the, you know, at least if you can't be there in body, you can be there in spirit. So people's images and photos will be there on cutouts there. And then last but not least, if you remember last year, the bunting or the signage around the inner ring of the lower bowl was dedicated towards Steve McNair and Eddie George in honor of their jersey retirements. This year, that area is going to be focused on celebrating our founders and our biggest fans. So, you know, if nothing else, our players will be surrounded by friendly faces as they play.
Sure. Maybe just one quick follow again for either one, whichever wants to answer. Just a little bit, if someone could talk about the challenge of kind of marketing and ticketing in this year, where potentially, you know, could be very, very small crowds, maybe no crowds for a whole season.
Sure. I guess that's for me as well. So on the marketing side, in terms of fan engagement, you know, even before the pandemic and the situation we find ourselves into now, you know, our goal is to build a 24/7, 365 relationship with all of our fans. Now, obviously, you know, the game experience is the crown jewel of that. It's a big part of that. And then that will be missing for now. Hopefully that changes. But the vast majority of our interactions with our fans happen away from the building. And now we'll have to focus even more on that, whether it's digital platforms. You know, we're launching, some of you may have seen, we started to launch our new Tennessee Tough marketing and ad creative, which is meant to really capture the spirit and resilience of this region, as well as the spirit of our team. And we're hoping that our fans relate to that, feel inspired, and see themselves reflected in that, in our brand and spirit around that. And then things like I mentioned earlier, like Kickoff Week, Nissan Kickoff Week, which we started yesterday with hosting 5 happy hours around Nashville and the suburbs. We're handing out over 15,000 Tennessee Tough yard signs. There'll be a couple of drive-in showings of Remember the Titans. We're having a pop-up shop where we're selling kind of cool kids clothes for Titans fans that might be a little bit hipper than myself or Burke or the rest of us on this phone, except for Buck, maybe. And then finally, we'll have our Titans Hangout Series, which is going to be a series of watch parties for Monday's big games or big game. Those are the things we've announced so far, but there'll be a couple other surprises along the way. But I guess at the end of the day, John, you know, we're trying to pull the levers that we still have access to engage with our fans. And, you know, these are things that we would be doing, we'd want to be doing anyway, but they just become that much more important and we're having to be that much more creative without the game experience.
The only thing that I would add is I think the marketing team's work in this respect is an example of how this is some of the best work that I feel like this organization has ever put out in these challenging times. They're using the challenge as an opportunity to be more creative and innovative. And I think our organization is not just this season, but in future seasons, when hopefully the world is a bit more back to normal, will benefit from the work that's happening in this offseason.
Steve Lehman?
Yeah, I think this probably goes for Burke. And thanks for doing this morning, guys. I guess my biggest question is, we've heard a lot about the stuff that's gone into the practice facility and locker room and all the arrangements for the players to make sure they're safe this season. What has been the biggest challenge of getting set for Nissan Stadium to put on a game day, eventually maybe with some fans? And are you anticipating at this point, given recent numbers, that maybe you'll see fans in October?
Thanks, Steve. Well, first I would say that to get to the punch, there's no breaking news here today. Certainly, we remain hopeful and ready to host fans if we are to get that opportunity. That's really a question for the mayor's office, and we respect the mayor's decision and trust the mayor's decision. As he said last week, this is a national response, not a Nashville response, in terms of being slow about reopening facilities like our venue. That said, I don't want to put words in his mouth or in the mouth of his health department, but I think that they would agree with us that we believe that the Titans game day experience that we have put forth in our safe stadium plan is first class. And it would allow us to safely host fans if we were to be given the opportunity. I genuinely believe that going to a Titans game this fall may be one of the safest things that could happen, you know, in a vacuum of what would happen within our four walls. There are just many more things that the mayor needs to be considering and the health department needs to be considering when green lighting thousands of people traveling in many cases from other regions to come to one of our games. But has it been a challenge? Sure, it's been a challenge, but it's one that we started to work on back in March or April, recognizing that this was very likely where the season would open up in terms of the pandemic. And we have had a team of cross-functional team of just about every organization in our club, as well as health experts from around Nashville, and in some cases, international health experts. Our vendors have participated in those phone calls. We've met weekly as a big group, and we've met in subgroups, multiple times every week to be sure that we kind of looked into every nook and cranny of things that we could do to reopen safely for our fans. And we're confident that if given the opportunity, we'll be able to deliver on that.
Gentry?
I guess also for Burke, do you have any kind of timetable on when you might know about the games in October? And have you modeled very many percentages, 20%, 25%, that kind of thing in terms of number of fans?
Yeah, it's a great question, Gentry. So let me put it this way. I was playing phone tag with the mayor's office this morning and plan to hopefully connect this afternoon. We're actively engaged. We're having conversations. I do think there's reason for hope for October, but very preliminary to be thinking about whether or not we'll ultimately get that green light. There's some operational needs that if for October 4th, if we don't know probably within the next 7 to 10 days, it would just make it difficult to ultimately deliver tickets and get people into the stadium. So hopefully there's word one way or the other over the next 4, 5, 6 days. In terms of percentages, yes, we have some percentages in mind, but I think the key is it doesn't start with the percentage, Gentry. It starts with what is safe. And what is safe in our mind in an outdoor stadium with everyone wearing face masks is kind of this table, this restaurant table pod-based seating of 1 to 6 fans that are socially distanced from every other pod of fans. And then we just work backwards to what that works out in terms of a stadium manifest. And it works out to about 21-22% if we were to activate the entire stadium with that capacity. But there's, we're trying to be creative, and we have other configurations that would even be less than that, that, that would still be worth the while of our opening and getting some fans in the door to enjoy a Titans game.
Paul.
Hi, gentlemen. Thank you for the chance to chat. Wondering if the circumstances have dictated any layoffs or furloughs within the organization.
No, sir, Paul. I think everyone who, I think Nashville as a whole appreciates Amy Adams Strunk, but those of us who work in the organization, who get to work with her firsthand and see her generosity, have a special appreciation for her. We have not undertaken furloughs or layoffs, and in fact, she's invested in our employees during the COVID pandemic. For those of you who've been out to the facility, you've seen the headquarters expansion has stayed on track. We invested in the technology that was necessary to set up and work remotely. The health and safety protocols have required heavy investment for the players, and we've extended those to staff areas as well. And in fact, not only have we not had furloughs or layoffs, she's actually invested in new headcount where it was necessary. We've brought on Adolfo Birch as chief legal officer, Surf Melendez as our new creative director, Dan Worley as our new general counsel. And in every case, they are quite literally best of class in the sports industry, which I think indicates that the Titans have become something of a destination club in the sports industry. So no furloughs or layoffs. And if anything, she's invested.
Also wondering how you did on the initial opt-out for season ticket holders. I know there's another opportunity for them if and when you're allowed to have people.
So we're not going to throw out specific numbers, Paul, but what I would tell you is that we're tracking along, you know, pretty much with the league average. We're doing a little bit better in the sense that we've had fewer people opt out than what the league average is.
Buck?
There we go. That was some of what Burke Nihil and Gil Beverly had to say to the media today. That will close out hour number three. We'll come back, switch gears, go back to college football. We'll talk with Mitch Light from The Athletic. We'll do that for the fourth and final hour. Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs 21+. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.